Welcome to Design Downtime, the podcast where we celebrate the joys of living a balanced creative life. I'm your host, Guy Siegel, a design director in Toronto, Canada, and I invite you to join me on this journey as we redefine what it means to be a successful design professional. Let's break free from the shackles of hustle culture and embrace the full spectrum of human experience, because life is too precious to be spent only in pursuit of productivity. Today, I'm thrilled to be talking with Raquel Rubio Breternitz. Raquel is an award-winning designer with a unique bent for research-driven work built with craft and polish. She is dedicated to inclusion, accessibility, and keeping tech human and human-focused. With a diverse background in purpose-driven work across product design and brand, Raquel has served as design director for Senator Elizabeth Warren and has contributed to organizations including the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, Shopify, the New York Times, Pivotal Labs, and IBM. Currently, they're a founding lead designer at Good Day Software. In addition to her professional accomplishments, Raquel is a writer, public speaker, panel moderator, and sketchnoter. In their free time, they draw comics, tear through fiction novels, play rhythm guitar, and take way too many photos of their cat. Raquel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Happy to have you. So you are going to talk to us today about comics.
Yes. I was listening to the bio that I sent you, that you read, and I realized that it's missing an enormous aspect of my character, which is really that, like, I'm just a silly little guy. I am just a goofy dude, and I love comics. I don't know, like, I feel like, I mean, this is how professional bios work. You sound so serious and so impressive, and the reality is just not that at all.
So are you implying that comics are not serious?
Comics can be very serious, actually. So thank you for calling me out. And in fact, most of the comics that I love the most would be characterized as extremely serious and, for lack of a better term, enormous downers. We've talked about this before, and when I say I love comics, I do love the goofy side, and I do love, like, the silly jokes and the New Yorker gags. But I, you know, a lot of people immediately think, oh, comics, Superman, Batman, DC, Marvel. And truth be told, I don't find myself drawn to those. There's a few that I do like, or that I think are great, and I absolutely respect people that love the superhero comics genre, but I am so much more interested in indie comics, autobiographical work. There is a amazing kind of subculture of people who tell really difficult and painful stories, and they do it with comics. And there's something about that medium to me that I just find so arresting. And to be fair, I also really like dark memoirs in the written form. But there's something about doing it with comics and with graphic novels, which is the fancy literature term for it, which I find silly. It's all comics. There's something about it. I don't know.
You mentioned that you're also drawn to the same kind of darker or downer storytelling, not just in the comics medium, but also in prose.
Yeah, not exclusively, but you know what I think it is that I have found there are so few avenues for people to tell difficult stories, and particularly to, you know, outside of therapy, work out trauma or very difficult experiences or very unique experiences. And I find myself drawn to that kind of storytelling. I think also partially because I'm drawn to hearing underrepresented voices and hearing stories that maybe you wouldn't tell at a party, but are deeply meaningful to your own development or growth, or just a perspective that you've never thought of, an experience of life that you never would have encountered. Yeah, I love that. Maybe it's because I'm a Scorpio. I'm drawn to the dark, drawn to the mysterious. Yeah.
Are those the types of stories that you find easier to find through comics?
Yes. That's not to say they aren't there in literature. Maybe it's not easier. Maybe easier isn't the word, but I think because I kind of got into comics or graphic novels, honestly, through that kind of storytelling, like one writer leads to another. There are people, you know, there are groups that know each other. There are like places I go to find comics that tell those kinds of stories. And so, you know, you find what you look for, maybe is what I'd say there.
This is very apt because these conversations, I like to start them with the origin story of how someone got to that hobby or interest. What is your introduction to comics? And just for clarification, I'm with you. One of my pet peeves is people referring to comics as graphic novels because they don't want to sound childish. No, I'm with you. It's all comics.
It's all comics. And frankly, even childish, so to speak, comics like can have such a depth of storytelling, like Calvin and Hobbes, for example. I grew up as a kid reading Calvin and Hobbes, absolutely loved it. And they're absolutely characterized as childhood comics, but they are incredible, incredible works of art. Storytelling, this like idea of a child having an inner life that is so meaningful for a kid to see themselves in, but it doesn't dumb you down at all. It's age appropriate, I would say, to some extent. And maybe parents would agree and say it's teaching you to be a little terror, but we all know that how to do that in ourselves. But yeah, I think like I grew up as a kid, you know, first getting into comics the way most people perhaps do, which is in the Sunday newspaper. Turn to that back page and read every single comic. You know, I had my favorites. I had my least favorites. I'm Brazilian, and I actually learned to read in Portuguese through Brazilian comics, which they call gibis, which is like the word for the little kind of short leaflet style, like Archie mini comics. Oh man, there's like another 30 minutes to talk about that. There's a whole world of Brazilian comics and some very famous ones that even have amusement parks and things. The World of Monica would be the translated one. So my, you know, my grandmother would send me comics from Brazil and I would, you know, tear through those. I would read the Sunday comics every week. And my dad would buy, he liked Calvin and Hobbes. He liked Dilbert. So I also liked Dilbert. I no longer like Dilbert in particular because of who that man is. But, you know, it's so funny because I'm reading these as a child, having never had a single experience with The Office, trying to like understand what it meant to be an adult. And I think I gleaned nothing besides women have triangle hair. It's really, I wouldn't put that on the list. But anyway, yeah, I you know, read a lot of comics as a kid. I liked to draw a lot. And so kind of naturally would draw comics as well. But then, you know, I kind of outgrew it for a while. And I think the way many people do. And I rediscovered comics, I want to say my freshman or sophomore year of college. And it was in a literature class telling LGBTQ stories, queer stories. And most of the syllabus was kind of fiction and nonfiction memoir style written books. But one of them was Fun Home by Alison Bechdel. And if you're not familiar, Fun Home is what they would term a graphic novel. It is Alison Bechdel's first memoir, written and drawn about her coming of age alongside learning about her closeted queer father. And she is, of course, also kind of having an experience of coming out and also kind of telling the story of having grown up in a funeral home, which is what Fun Home refers to, which is, again, like, what a unique perspective. And I don't know, that that book blew my mind. Everything about it. It's written so beautifully and so intelligently. And the way that she, like, if you start to analyze, like, the imagery she uses, the way that she draws herself and her father and all of these things, there's so much rich meaning in, like, the ways that, like, I remember there's this, like, panel where she is trying to have this difficult discussion with her father, and I think he's on a riding lawnmower, if I recall correctly. It's been a while since I've reread it, but, you know, he's, like, just getting further and further away in the drawings as she's, like, trying to talk to him, and it's just so, like, it's so good. And that book, reading that book, actually was kind of the final push that I needed to come out, reading her coming out story and how difficult it was for her father, who never came out. And I don't know, it changed my life, basically. And it got me back into graphic novels. And then I was obsessed after that. There's a particular section of the Perry Castaneda Library on UT campus that I possibly read every single book in, the graphic novel section. And through that, I found, you know, Black Hole by Charles Burns, which is another excellent, beautifully drawn, really interesting kind of coming of age graphic novel about, like, how monstrous it is to be a teenager. That's how I would characterize it. Some people say that it's about AIDS. It is about dealing with outsiderness and body horror and youth in interesting ways. You just have to read it, you know? And yeah, so I would, you know, stop from going long here, but that I would characterize that as my kind of dual origin story. And finding Alison Bechdel made me really interested in writing my own comics again, and kind of opened up this idea in my mind that I've still been kind of trying to form and chase of, like, maybe I can tell my story, and maybe I have a story that is worth telling, and that I can say the things that I can't really figure out how to say in words with pictures, maybe.
So have you done that?
Kind of. I draw comics a lot, mostly either, like, one shots. So similar, I've shown you, in fact, some of my kind of New Yorker style gag one panel comics. Or I've done some, like, slice of life, like, overheard comics. I did a comics class with this great cartoonist in DC called Lenora Yerkes, and she had this awesome style of four panel comic or one page comic. You can kind of set it up how you want, but it was did, saw, felt. And so you spend a little bit of time kind of journaling, thinking about your day or your week or the time period you want to kind of do a comic about. And then you just draw. What did you do? What did you see? And what did you feel? And it's so simple, but it's really powerful. And I often, like, out of this class, I saw some really deep and interesting comics come out of just that. It's almost a meditative practice. And I like to do those as well. What I've struggled with, or what I haven't found a way into yet, is that bigger thing, this idea of writing and drawing my own fun home. And I think part of it is, like, it's still a difficult story for me. And so it's difficult for me to tell. It's difficult for me to think about telling the world. I think that I have some hangups about that. And it's just like writing a book. It's hard. It's big. And I just need to freaking do it. And I will one day. I've been circling closer and closer to it with these kind of smaller pieces and taking comics classes periodically just to keep myself going and getting back into art, doing live drawing on Sunday mornings. My other big barrier is that I don't feel that I'm very good at drawing bodies. This is, I think, natural to any kind of young artist, perhaps, but you know, we're drawn to drawing heads and faces, and we're always like, I feel very comfortable drawing all manner of expressions facially. But then once you get into like actually like accurate and expressive body positions and shapes and interactions, I'm just not happy with it. And so I, you know, often just tear up my paper in frustration, and I need to eventually kind of work through that, work past that. But that's where I'm at with that.
What do you find about comics that you don't get from other art forms?
I think it's the marriage of the medium. My whole life, I've like kind of vacillated between, am I a writer or am I an artist? And by choosing design, sometimes I think it seems like I chose artist. and then other times I'm sitting here and I'm like, I'm really a writer. But I think like that's really actually not a good framework of thinking. Like, I am imposing labels on myself because humans like categories. The world likes categories. And the reality is that I'm a secret third thing, and I like words and I like pictures, and put together, the whole is greater than the sum of their parts. It's similar to what I was talking about, kind of the fun home panel, the way that you can express so much meaning by having the words you're writing, or even the words your character is saying, say one thing, and then the art that you're drawing, the like body language, or even sometimes just pure landscape, I've seen that done, they play off each other and they create a whole new meaning. And it you know, it kind of matches how we actually work and live in real life day to day. Like, we are taking in information. Like, even right now, you and me, you're not just hearing the words that I'm saying. If I said something and then started just like pointing my thumbs down really vehemently, you would get meaning from that, you know? And so to me, I think something I love about comics is that you get to better match that the whole range of expression of meaning that we as humans use in our day to day without even thinking about it, but don't think about using when we're sitting down to tell a story.
I think that's a beautiful way to put it, because you have both the very internal world of literature and you have the external visual side of, let's say, film, and you get a third meaning out of those two together.
Yeah, film is a, you know, it's a similar thing of there's so much meaning in what you choose to show and what you choose to say. Yes, I love film too. I think I love comics in particular because it is also drawing, and there's like something so innately fulfilling about art making of any kind, but also craft and using your hands to do a thing. Like, I think there's something about it that is like really we love as humans, and that people feel they can't do or aren't allowed to do anymore after kids. Like, it's so natural as a child to crayon on everything. And then like either you become an artist or you leave it behind. And I wish that weren't true.
So you talked about your history with comics and your very, very emotional connection to it. It was there at a very pivotal moment of your life and even inspired some of those. But so far, you've been talking about comics as a personal solitary experience. Mm. I'm really curious to hear, has comics been there for you as an enabler of a community?
That's a great question. I think so. Yeah. I wish that I invested more in comics as community, because it, like, truly the comics community that I have found or been a part of has always been so awesome. Like, such cool, thoughtful, interesting people, so open, so interested in helping each other tell the stories that they need to tell. Very giving and like so unique as well. And I've kind of like dipped in and out as I've taken classes, kind of had small groups of people that we share comics with each other and then leave. There's people I still follow on Instagram. I still follow their comics making. I've seen, you know, friends I did classes with publish graphic novels or get published in the New Yorker, which is very cool to see. But I haven't followed up as much as I'd like to, and I will more moving forward, I think. There's also like an amazing network of kind of conventions. There's SPX, which is the Small Press Expo in Maryland, just outside DC, that I got to go to a few times. There's MICE outside of Boston. There's TCAF in Toronto, Toronto Comics and Arts Festival, I think. And Austin actually used to have really cool zine fest called New South that a friend of mine started and that sadly didn't continue. But they do on occasion have pop-ups from the Lone Star zine group. And that is also like, you know, that is just so cool. Everyone there is awesome. You get to meet the artists. You spend more money than you should on 500 comics that will take you the next year to read. And it's great. I love it.
How has your taste in comics evolved since those first books that you read?
Yeah, I think I spent a little bit of time really trying hard to love the big names. There's some amount I still do. Like, I will always love Ghost World. I love Black Hole by Charles Burns. Absolutely love Adrian Tomei and Shortcomings. And then I tried to make myself like R. Crumb. And I tried to make myself like, oh, what's his name? A few other of these kind of big alt comic name guys. There's some amount of it that I can really appreciate. Harvey Beekar is another one. But it wasn't my community. I appreciate the art. I appreciate the effort it takes. I don't appreciate some of the misogyny and racism that they cover up with this kind of veneer of like, well, I'm the underground, blah, blah, blah. You know, same as cartoon, like comedians kind of like to do some amount of punching down or just like crappy shit, for lack of a better phrase. And I think like once I allowed myself to just, you know, go to these zine fests and just buy whatever the hell I thought looked interesting and discover artists I never would have heard of who aren't big names and discover a lot more queer storytellers, people of color telling really interesting, more nuanced versions of like the immigrant story. One that comes to mind, in fact, right now is Squire by Nadia Shamas and Sarah Alfaghi, I think is how you pronounce her name. Awesome story by a Palestinian, I believe, author. Yeah, and I just also expanded like what kind of art was allowed to be good to me. There are people who would not be termed great artists, but have such unique, interesting style that is so them and tells their story. There are cartoonists that are very chaotic and you look at the page and you're immediately overwhelmed. And there are people who would be like, absolutely not, put that back down. But they're telling something with that too, that I've come to really love and come to really enjoy forcing myself to spend more time on a page. You know, like there's such an instinct to just blow through, read really quickly. But if you spend time, then you get more out of it as well. And yeah, I don't know. And I have dipped back into more of the like serialized superhero style comics. I used to be a little bit pretentious about it. I unfortunately have a propensity for being pretentious before I slap myself in the head and remember to not be a stupid jerk. And that there's excellent work everywhere. And so, like, I've read Saga, loved that. I've been reading Monstrous. I've been reading, I think I showed you The Human Target, which is, like, technically a Batman story, even though Batman's not actually in it. The art in that is just unbelievably great. And so I hope that my experience of comics continues to be opening up and finding more and more things that I had never thought about liking and end up loving.
What's currently on your reading list?
Ooh, that is a really good question. I just bought a bunch of comics at half price books, which is a danger for me. There's a new one by Jillian Tamaki. I think it's called Falling. She and Mariko Tamaki are cousins, and they wrote this one summer ages ago, which is another graphic novel I love. They like team up often, and it's always awesome. And so there's a new one from them that I would really want to read. There's a series from Tilly Walden, who I also adore. I've read everything she's written. She is an extraordinary prolific graphic novelist. Also really, really interesting story, kind of young queer cartoonist. And this is an example of me pushing my boundaries because she got hired to write for a Walking Dead story. And I am just so supremely uninterested in zombies. And generally, I just am not interested in zombie stories. I shouldn't say that because I loved The Last of Us and I'm expanding my horizons. But I do want to read her series called Clementine, largely because I love her. And then I will probably end up loving The Walking Dead because of it. And that's just how it goes. I wish I was doing this in my home office because I literally have just a stack. But I am not there currently, so I'm not remembering. I just bought a huge one called Eden. What is the name of the author? K. Roten, Wroten. Their art is so interesting, I find, like really pretty and colorful and like kind, almost slightly anime, but not, just really cool. Really cool work. And they just came out with a huge, huge big boy. And they've mostly only done tiny mini zines. So I'm very excited to see what happens as they kind of stretch and expand to tell that big of a story. So haven't read that yet, but I am very excited to as well. I'm sure there's more, but it's a good start.
It's a great start.
Yes.
Raquel, where can people find you?
On the internet, as you do. I'm unfortunately still on Twitter. I'm going down with that ship, as Dido says, as Raquel Designs. I'm on Instagram, Raquel Bredernitz. I wish there were better places to be, but there aren't yet, but I also, I think, am the only Raquel Bredernitz in the actual world. So if you Google me, you'll find me, and I would be more than happy to talk comics.
Thank you so much for talking comics with me.
Yeah, this was great. I am realizing that I could talk another 30 minutes about this, and that's nice.
Well, we can always have you for part two.
That's true. You could.
This is all for this episode of Design Downtime. Thank you for joining me, and until next time, I hope you enjoy your downtime.